Hey, I'm Alok, the host of Build the Change, a brand new podcast from MacBlue about the people at the center of progress. Join us on a journey across the country as we uncover stories about the everyday folks working together to build something bigger than themselves, real change. You'll hear from students in Appalachia advocating for LGBTQ-friendly books in their communities, healthcare workers providing telehealth abortions across the country, immigrant farm workers fighting for their safety in the blazing sun, and candidates in states with razor-thin margins. Listen to Build the Change now, wherever you get your podcasts.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Welcome to Democracy-ish. I'm Touré.
And I'm Danielle Moody.
And we started last week talking about High on the Hog, the Netflix special about Black food. And we wanted to go deeper into that because we both love Black food so much. And I actually, you know, interestingly, I just went to a friend's house, a white friend's house, who cooked, he said he was a very good cook, and fried chicken and waffles for everybody. And the fried chicken was good. I let him know before we got there, high pressure, you're making fried chicken for a Black man. You better like step it up and come correct. The chicken was good, crunchy. I hate to validate stereotypes, but it was not sufficiently seasoned. It didn't have enough salt. There probably could have been more pepper. There could have been more garlic powder. There could have been more onion powder. It could have had like a more, like a
so
more.
What was on it? Because you named all the things it could have had. Was there something that was on it that stood out?
I don't know. I don't know that there was any seasoning on it. I think it was just fried and like presented.
Fried in what though?
I mean,
like flour. Yes, I get it. But like nothing. Did they use butter? Like, did they use buttermilk? What did they do?
They probably.
Oh, you weren't there for the cooking.
I wasn't there. Let me. You know what I really want to do is talk about New Orleans, because New Orleans for me is and Memphis, but really New Orleans is where I have gotten the best Black food that I've ever had in my life. There's the gumbo down there is extraordinary. God, what is the name of that restaurant? There's a restaurant.
This is the one place that I've never been.
Oh, wow.
That I do want to go only for the food, only for the culture of it.
You could have an amazing just like food tour. We went to this amazing Dookie Chase. We went to this amazing sandwich shop that the locals told us to go to. But Dookie Chase is one of the greatest restaurants perhaps in the country. Marc Morial took me there and the chicken was, I mean, like everything was perfect. The chicken, the biscuits, everything. And it was just the three times I've eaten there stand out in the memory. Like, you know, like there's certain places like the first time I went to Nobu, the first time I went to Dookie Chase, like, oh God, you know, the first time I had like gumbo that was perfect. Like, oh God.
Because there's something about showcasing your culture and using food. There is something about perfecting. And like when you mentioned Nobu, I think about like how I've never had fish that was like cleaner. And I don't mean clean as in cleaned, but just like where it's so pure and so perfectly sliced that you feel like you're transported someplace. And I think that what's interesting with regard to High on the Hog is that when you watch these other food shows, right, you're often inundated with a lot of European chefs, right? Who makes the Michelin chef, who does all of these things. And it's usually largely white, largely male, very few women sprinkled in. And so you don't get a ton of, I feel, like connection to the places that you're in. And because there's not a lot of culture and ethnicity, it's just like, oh, this person is a great chef because they're French and they trained under so-and-so. I think the beauty of shows like High on the Hog is that you get transported to a place and there's a history that it's connected to it. And it isn't just about the skill of the thing, because that is, of course, important, but it's really about the story behind it. Right. Like when I was watching that show, there are so many things about America I didn't know. Right. And you're learning it through the plate. Like you're learning it as he's moving from these different places, starting in Benin, but then moving into the Americas and back again. You felt like you were learning through eating, and you wanted to go to these places, and you had a different respect now as I'm walking to go look at Carolina gold rice and like understanding the history behind that.
I mean, you know, I guess it's my knowledge of, and I don't claim to be an expert, but what I know about the history of Black food that makes it so much more rich and important to me, and the ancestry that it connects me to. Slavery, post-slavery, you know, the 50s, all that sort of stuff. Like it connects me to, you know, my grandparents, my ancestors, you know, the chicken, the collards. I mean, I think about my grandmother who's passed away, who grew up in Alabama. I think she was one of like 12 children or something like that. She made Thanksgiving dinner for the first like 15, 16 years of my life. We would go to her house in New York, in Westchester, and she would make the dinner. And her biscuits were the thing that I really remember. I mean, like she had this amazing turkey gravy that just made every turkey taste amazing. But the biscuits were just so perfectly fluffy and yet crispy and yet like the perfect warmth. And it was always like about those biscuits, and it's a side piece, but it's so central. And, you know, I felt this connection and this transportation to Alabama and where she had come from and whoever she had carried those recipes forward from.
You know, what I always find really interesting, particularly when I travel, is that the things that I always want to try, it seems that in every country, they're like, oh, well, that's the food that like the workers eat or the peasants eat or like these people eat. But like, you should also try X, Y, and Z. And I find that the foods that have made it into a lot of our everyday life are foods that were considered like working food. And when I think about Black American food, I think about like how little folks had to make something so delicious. Right. Like you think about like how little you were given and how much you were able to make with it. And it's just, I don't know. There's something really beautiful about that. And I think, too, when you're talking about like particular item that transports you. So my family, as folks know, is Jamaican. And so when I think of Black food, you know, I think that you have, like, there is, it's very expansive because for me, Black food is Jamaican food. Whenever I smell it walking around in Brooklyn or I'm home with my family, it just brings back all of these memories. And like all of this history, like, how did you learn how to make this? And it's a way to kind of take a journey with family that is really important and exciting. And that's what I felt like watching this show. It's like, you're taking this journey with like the entirety of the Black community, and you're all getting to experience this thing that we have different attachments to, but as a collective. And like the history that was taken from us is exactly what makes the show so special, is them bringing it back, right? Like we all have these, oh, we love macaroni and cheese, we love fried chicken, we love this, and don't necessarily know why each of our families make these things. And I think that the way that it's presented here, Yeah, it's just like the connectivity that you've been missing.
I've spent a bunch of time in Jamaica, and I love Jamaica so much. Bunch of time at Rock House, bunch of time at other places. And, you know, I remember walking down the road and going to like the tiniest little shack on the side of the road and like, give me a lobster and some French fries and a red stripe. And it's like two people in there. And you can see, like, you know, it's just made for you because they don't do fast food because, like, three people come in here for lunch a day. So, like, we made this just for you and it's super fresh. And you just feel so connected to the people and the place and the culture. I think you were when you're talking about working people food, you made me think about sauces. And I think a lot of times working folks will add a lot of sauces to their food because it makes the food seem to like last longer and like fill up more and like less can see more if there's a great thick sauce with it. And, you know, there's something about a killer sauce that will just destroy me. I mean, like, I keep coming back to New Orleans, but like the po' boys in New Orleans, and like it's like, give me extra gravy, and you're like, you know, give me a little meat with the gravy, and you're like dipping it in the gravy, and like, you know, it's just all over you. It's the sauce is the thing that crushes you. Like, anybody can make some chicken, but the sauce that comes with it, that like, just that's what destroys you.
I feel like you missed your calling as a food critic.
I don't think
like I feel like the way in which you were describing New Orleans through the food makes me feel crazy that I have never visited it.
You have to visit, and you could just go on a food crawl and just go to the gumbo shop and then the fried chicken shack and then the this and the that and Dookie Chase and whatever and just be so happy. Memphis is also extraordinary for great food. I went to a great fried chicken place in Memphis that, because, you know, like, it, yeah, okay, fine, it's up to you, but like, you know, if it's too crunchy, it's too much, right? But if it's not crunchy at all,
no, you can. I love a good crunch.
No, I love it. I want some crunch, but not too much crunch, right? Like, there's a midpoint where it's like, this is the perfect crunch, right? And like, when you have a duality of taste going on, so you crunch the outer, but then the chicken is cooked, so it like the, so you get the two different textures at once. That's right, because if the outside is too soggy, then it's not enough.
But let me ask you this. Why did your friend, the white friend that you went, that made dinner, why do you think they were compelled to do a chicken and waffle? So is it their specialty?
I don't know if it's, I don't know if it's their specialty. It was a brunch group. Like, we were coming together around a brunch time on a Sunday. So like, you know, it made sense to do some chicken and waffles. I guess this person felt, you know, very confident, sort of like, and I can serve.
Did this happen to be last Saturday? Was it also on Juneteenth?
Or? No, it was not. No, not on Juneteenth. Let me tell you, one of the great places to experience our cuisine, and I brought this up last week, I know, but the National Museum of African American History and Culture. Mm. I mean, like, the history section is amazing. You know, that like the rest of the museum is amazing, but the food court, they did not skimp a detail. If memory serves, there's four different regions of Black, of African-American cuisine that are highlighted. And there's four different stations where you can go and like multiple options within them. So you get the full range of like Southern, Mid-Atlantic. God, what are the four regions? I want to look it up and make sure I get it right.
I know, that's what I'm doing. Because I know it.
I mean, like, you have, like, if you're going to go there, you have, oh, here we go. If you ever going to go there, you have to spend some time on the in the food court, because it's a it's an important part of the whole situation.
Let me ask you something. Do you think that there is something that white Americans are particularly connected to as it pertains to food that has, like, is that what also makes Black people so incredibly extraordinary, because the food is so embedded in our culture, and this is the thing that is a dividing force for us, is that there, whiteness is a construct. There's no culture there, so there's nothing that they're...
Yeah, no, I think the answer is sort of embedded in the question, in that, you know, which we've talked about before, that whiteness in terms of culture is not equivalent to Blackness. There is no white culture. There is absolutely Black culture that is meaningful to us, that we would agree upon, that transports us, music, food, you know, language, etc. There is no white culture. Now, there is an extraordinarily rich Italian-American culture, you know, and Italian-American food is fantastic. You know, Greek-American food is fantastic. You know, we could go through, you know, French-American cuisine.
But let's think about the Paula Deans of the world. Who Southern cooking? Southern cooking is what they're claiming. That is like, but Southern, they say Southern cooking, and we say that is soul food, or, you know, or Black American food. And they're like, no, this is Southern cooking, and that would be considered what they're claiming.
I don't know. I am not a food historian, okay, but I would throw down that 99% of what we know as Southern cuisine comes from Black people. And that number may be low. So, I mean, even that you have the face of a Paula Deen creating something, you're making Black food. You were taught that by Black people. Surely you know Black people who do it better than you. You know, you're just a white face presenting Black cuisine, but like it's all, you know, Colonel Sanders was presenting Black cuisine. Now wait, do you eat fried chicken, or are you a vegetarian?
I eat fried chicken.
So which is better? KFC, and I know we're in the fast food realm, right? I get that. But KFC or Popeyes?
Popeyes.
Really? Popeyes has more crunch, but I used to be addicted to KFC. I'm so
KFC, like, I get that they came out with it, you know, they have like they're extra crunchy and all of those things. But anytime even when I think about the KFC just sounds soggy, right? Like the soggy chicken. Like
And by old, I mean it's been sitting on the rack for 10 minutes, then it's going to have that sog. But if you say, this is how ridiculous I am, if you ask for it from the hot chest, then it will have a little more crisp to it because it's newer and it's being kept warmer. But yes, Popeyes is better at the crunch. KFC is more
soft. It's better at
soft.
All of it. The crunch, the seasoning, all of it. The crunch, the seasoning, there is no real comparison there.
So this is one thing that's been going around on the Twitter. Olive Garden, and we're a little out of the realm of Black culture with this one, but Olive Garden versus Red Lobster.
I'm going to say something that probably is going to make me come off bad, but I couldn't tell you the last time that I was in fucking either of them. And so that being the case, I don't live in a chain restaurant district. It would be unfair of me to pass judgment. Maybe they have expanded in their palate over the last two decades.
Fair. In New York, there's a lot less of that. In Brooklyn, we definitely are not inundated with that. There's more individualistic stores. Although, you know, my mom lives in Boston. I have been to Olive Garden. I have been to Red Lobster. Red Lobster is superior.
Look at Touré. He's just like us.
I have suburban culture in me, not just New York City. York City, fly to Jamaica, fly back to New York. I don't know nothing about the suburbs. I'm Danielle. I'm too good for the exurbs.
I grew up in the suburbs.
I've never been to the mall. But I'm a city kid.
But is strip mall considered suburban culture?
Absolutely.
Like, is strip mall food, I guess that's suburban culture.
Absolutely.
That sounds terrible. Maybe that's why I left.
I'm not saying it's good. I'm saying it is what it is.
Okay. Great. Well, I would miss that debate. I wouldn't be able to offer my thoughts between Red Lobster and the Olive Garden, but I also think that that's comparing apples to oranges because it's two completely different cuisines.
This show is part of the...
From the New Yorker staff writer Vincent Cunningham, a keenly observed novel of a young Black man searching for his place in the world amidst a moment of historic change. Great Expectations is about David's 18 months working for the senator's presidential campaign. Along the way, David meets a myriad of people who raise a set of questions. Questions of history, art, race, religion, and fatherhood that force David to look at his own life anew and come to terms with his identity as a young Black man and father in America. Inspired by the author's experiences working on Obama's 2008 presidential campaign, Cunningham uses a political campaign as his narrative backbone. Great Expectations will be one of the talked-about novels of the year, Colm McCann. Great Expectations is available wherever books are sold.
Hey, I'm Alok, the host of Build the Change, a brand new podcast from MacBlue about the people at the center of progress. Join us on a journey across the country as we uncover stories about the everyday folks working together to build something bigger than themselves. Real change. You'll hear from students in Appalachia advocating for LGBTQ-friendly books in their communities, healthcare workers providing telehealth abortions across the country, immigrant farm workers fighting for their safety in the blazing sun, and candidates in states with razor-thin margins. Listen to Build the Change now, wherever you get your podcasts.
Pro-Democracy Podcast Coalition.
The midterms are coming, and it's more important than ever that we protect and fix our elections.
We all know that our government is broken. Politicians spend more time working for themselves, their big donors, and their political party instead of for us.
We as Americans have had enough of the corruption, partisan bickering, and gridlock. Look, I get that all the nonsense makes you want to tune out, but I'm here to tell you there's reason for hope.
Our political system is broken now, but we can fix it. That's why we've partnered with Represent Us, a nonpartisan grassroots organization that has helped notch more than 160 victories to improve our elections and give power back to the voters where it belongs.
Right now, until November, there are many, many ways you can get involved. Represent Us is working in cities and states to pass good government policies like ranked choice voting, and they're also recruiting folks to help staff the polls.
Let's protect our elections now and for generations to come.
Visit represent.us/pod to learn more. That's represent.us/pod.
My grandmother used to make the best mashed potatoes, and it had some lump and texture in it and some skin in it, right? So like you could grab it with a fork, you know, like if you grabbed with your hand, it would
You be able to do that?
Well, some people make it fairly soft, so if you grabbed it with a fork, it would slip through the slats, so you need a spoon for it. Some people, right, if it's too soft, if it's too like sort of mixed, right, so it becomes like mush, like the consistency of like baby food. But like when it's like thicker, it's like, oh, that's the best. But you can 100% tell the difference between white people and Black people, because white people will serve you mashed potatoes and without gravy, and they're like, can you just eat the mashed potatoes? I'm like, so you have mashed potatoes without gravy? Like, what? How did that happen?
It probably shouldn't.
Shouldn't happen.
It shouldn't happen. I think that I don't know. Baked potato.
You prefer a baked potato to a mash?
No. If you are not going to do the proper pairing, that is like a peanut butter sandwich, right? You want peanut butter and jelly. So mashed potatoes, one would assume gravy. If you cannot indeed make a gravy, and I feel like I'm doing a Law and Order defense. If you cannot afford a gravy, then one will be provided,
by the court.
By the courts. No, then you should just microwave a baked potato and give that to people.
My God, that takes an hour. Microwaving a baked potato.
It takes 8 minutes. I don't know what kind of microwave you're using.
Eight minutes? What are you talking about? We put it in the oven for like, it takes like an hour for it to get
ready. In an oven.
My God, 8 minutes. Why do you even have a microwave? What is wrong with you? A microwave? My God. Your stomach must be, I pity your stomach. A microwave? My goodness.
What are you, Amish? Are you, like, do you not use electricity anymore?
We have a toaster oven. We take our time with the food. I mean,
oh,
like,
look at you slowing down. How wonderful. Yeah. I'm glad you have all the time in the world to make a potato.
You don't
Some
have
of
children.
Us, you know,
why are you
are
rushing
fighting
for?
Oppression.
What are you rushing for to get back to woke AF? I got another show tomorrow. Oh, my God. We got to get through this lunch fast. So get back to woke AF. Ah!
Yeah.
There's no mommy. Make me, mommy, mommy, mommy.
What kind of episode will this?
Mommy. And no parent has never thought, shut the fuck up. You may not say it, but you've thought, shut the fuck up.
Oh my God.
It's real. Struggle's real.
It is not.
Struggle's real.
You are a struggle.
Is there something on the traditional Black soul food table. Think about all the stuff that you get that you're like, I don't fuck with that.
I don't love everybody's collard greens. I don't like collard greens as a green.
Mind. I don't want anybody's collard greens.
But I also don't, I just don't, I don't like them.
I don't like them either. I don't like collards at all. I don't feel hurt.
I think they taste like dirt. I will go on this show, just continue on.
I wouldn't go that far, but I was 100% thinking of collard greens, and I'm like, I will always pass up your collard greens. Like, it's just, it's not happening. I'm not putting it on my plate. I'm not going to pretend.
Because if it's not something that if it's a little bit bad, like, it's still okay. It's not pizza. It's like, if it's a little bit bad, like, you want to vomit.
It's not a risk worth taking. Wow. Wow. I'm not big on mac and cheese either.
Are you a terrorist?
This is the second time today I get called a terrorist. I don't know.
What else did you say that sounded insane?
Well, Mark Lamont Hill was killing me for hating on his 76ers and the big L that they took. But that's a whole nother story. Yeah, I don't know. It's so... I don't
Delicious.
Know.
Oh, noodles that hold both milk and cheese and creaminess and the levels of cheese and flavor. That is a Black soul staple. No, and people have competitions for this.
100%.
It's a serious thing.
I love rigatoni bolognese, right? Italian dish that is just when it's done right, it is just perfect. The first time I went to Italy, they made that for me, and it was like, this is heaven on a plate. And it's creamy and it's meaty and it's just everything. Mac and cheese is its cousin, and I'm like, I don't know.
Mac and cheese is not its cousin.
How's it not? It's a noodle dipped
what
in
kind of
sauce.
Comparison are you making?
What are you talking
Between
about?
Macaroni cheese and a bolognese?
Yeah, there's no meat, obviously, in the mac and cheese, but how are they not cousins? They're both noodles with stuff with cheese or cream on top of them. It's just, and usually you put cheese on the bolognese.
Why don't we throw in, you know, like a lo mein as well and say that that's really kind of like macaroni and cheese's cousin. Do you see how ridiculous that sounds? That's how ridiculous
this
comparison
sounds. Well, you sound ridiculous all the time, but I don't see how you're saying mac and cheese and rigatoni are not similar. And I'm just saying I recognize that they're similar. And one I would like travel for, if you said that they make really good rigatoni, I'm like, okay, I will drive 2 hours to try that. And mac and cheese, I'm like, I don't know. I'm good. I don't know. Just me. I'm weird.
You are. And I think that you're going to have less friends after this show.
You didn't have to agree with that.
And you might have less friends after the show.
I mean, I'm pretty sure people will judge the collard green remark.
Oh, no.
I'm pretty sure.
Oh, no, I meant one less friend. I don't know about the people out there. They seem to love you. Yeah, I see your comments. Their comments are always, Danielle, you're so on point. Danielle, you argued that so well. Danielle, you speak for the people. Torre was there also. I see you. I see you. Torre
was there also. They mention you?
They mentioned me that I was present at the recording. But Danielle, woo, they love you. Our fans love you. It's pathetic.
I don't know if they will love this particular episode, but I appreciate the love. And I'm sorry that Torre.
You know, it's like mommy and daddy. It really is. The kids love, the little kids especially, daddy? Who daddy? Where is that?
Did you see that challenge where the kids would be put in the middle and the parents were said to like walk off?
First of all.
And I've choose seen which it. Parent they would go with?
I have not watched any of those because I think that whole idea is cruel for the children in like making them in a heartbeat choose which parent they're going to run after. I think that is cruel. I think it is sad. I can't even watch. I whenever I see them setting up for that, I flick on to the next. I'm like, no, I can't watch that. It's so cruel.
I mean, you're not running. They didn't get in a car, Torre, and like drive off. They like literally ran within eyeshot. I mean, if that is the trauma that you're worried about exposing your child. No.
I mean, little kids, little kids having a moment to have choose where do I go with mommy or daddy? Like, that's a traumatic moment.
So you wouldn't play this game with your children when you were
younger?
I would
not play the game with my children. I know my daughter would go with my wife. My son would.
Hey, I'm Alok, the host of Build the Change, a brand new podcast from MacBlue about the people at the center of progress. Join us on a journey across the country as we uncover stories about the everyday folks working together to build something bigger than themselves, real change. You'll hear from students in Appalachia advocating for LGBTQ-friendly books in their communities, healthcare workers providing telehealth abortions across the country, immigrant farm workers fighting for their safety in the blazing sun, and candidates in states with razor-thin margins. Listen to Build the Change now wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, folks, I'm Mark Maron from the WTF podcast, and this episode is brought to you by Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues, your ally to help tackle your allergy symptoms this season. I love the change of seasons, but nobody loves pollen and all those other things floating in the air that make you sneeze during this nice weather. Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues are hypoallergenic and allergist approved. So fight back against watery eyes and runny noses without worrying about irritating your skin. For this allergy season, grab Kleenex and face allergies head on.
He might walk with me. He might run after her. I don't know what he'd do. He probably wouldn't run in either direction. He'd just be staring at his phone like, are you guys done? Can we go back home?
Yeah. Well, no. I think that kids have a natural, you know, maneuver with parents. But I also think it's not torture. I thought it was funny. It was a great challenge. And then there were some kids that didn't choose either of the parents and like sat down.
So what are you saying? That everybody runs after mom?
It was like 9 times out of 10.
They run with mom.
Yeah. She's usually the one providing the most.
I mean,
food, a person to talk to, all the things. Stereotypically. Yeah.
I mean, stereotypically, yes. Mom is better able to do all the emotional labor. She's the first friend. She's the first one you bond with and get tight with. And that bond remains. And like, yeah, I fully respect that, which is partly why I don't want to do the challenge, because I'm probably going to lose. And I really don't want to put myself out there like that. Did you see? I know you saw this performative white woman crying challenge.
What?
Oh, you haven't seen this? Oh, girl. This is
what are you saying?
TikTok right now. White woman cry and make it look convincing. And then like 10 seconds in, they're like change it up. And they like stop crying on a dime and like have this wry smile like, gotcha. And like performative white woman tears. And it's like, this is shocking and traumatizing and terrifying because we know white woman tears have gotten people killed, have gotten people incarcerated, have gotten people beaten up, have gotten people arrested, have gotten people canceled. And like, they're all just showing like, look, I can fake the fuck out of these tears. Watch me. Like, it's scary as fuck.
That actually sounds really evil.
It is.
And when you just put in all, yeah. Oh God, now all of the men who's been lynched, names coming through my mind right now. Yeah, and that, you know, but that's the whole thing. That all goes back to the Karening and not necessarily crying, but always going to be in fear for your life. And the fact that, what is that? Something that they passed down in school? Did we not? That clearly wasn't taught. It was like an extracurricular.
I don't think it's even passed down in schools. I think at a fairly young age, they see that their crying, their fragility, their moment of weakness and needing to be protected will galvanize everybody around them. You know, even if you are dead wrong, you start crying, white women start crying, the whole temperature of the room will change. Everything will change in your favor. You know, and you learn it that you have that power at a fairly early age, and you clearly, they know how to whip it out at the right moment.
Yeah, that just seems, I mean, that's just another way to weaponize whiteness. And then you're combining in the femininity and the fact that, you know, all of those incidents that you're talking about have come in with the idea of white men coming in to rescue, right? To be the savior in that way, the damsel in distress, the whole, you know, concept around that. And that is, I hate that game. I never want to see it. I don't know why anybody would make that up and play it and think that that was great.
I don't know why they think that this is a fun thing to do. I mean, I don't know. I guess like they're so in touch with their emotions that they can fake them on a dime. And like,
is that you trying to play devil's advocate? Because that,
no,
is not,
I don't think it's cool at all. I'm trying to see like, why would you even show me that you have this superpower to be able to cry and make me really believe that you're really sad and upset? And it's total performance because you can snap your fingers at a second and change. And this isn't like actresses. This is like regular white girls on TikTok. Like, let me show you how much I can cry and then poof, make it go away. And like, it's scary.
It sounds like a part of Get Out. It is scary.
Totally.
I don't want the weaponizing of whiteness. And
totally. No. And nobody even...
This is why I'm not on TikTok. And if it's not stupid dances, then I don't want to be involved.
A lot of people maybe didn't have the language of this before Amy Cooper, but that moment opened a lot of people's eyes. I think you're starting to see it with the... with all the Karen videos. Mm-hmm. But the Amy Cooper moment really like expanded people like, oh, look at her in her natural habitat, lying her ass off, claiming to be vulnerable.
Because you got to see both sides of it.
Yeah.
You got to hear whatever, you know, the person, the operator, the 911 operator on the other side was hearing. And then the fearing for my life while you're standing so far away, you're holding this dog by the neck, literally, you know, what she got back and suing her job and all of that stuff. But you're seeing like the 911 operator is not going to say, well, ma'am, you don't really sound like you're fearing for your life. Right. And then being held accountable. But then the idea again, but it's always, that's the get out of jail free card here in America. White women's tears.
It sure is. And it's super scary. Super scary. Thank you for listening to Democracy-ish. I'm Torre.
I'm Danielle Moody, and this was a stream of consciousness.
It was a stream of conscious show, but we'll be back next week if white women's tears allow it.
Or we don't drown in them.